I found in one of them, Khalil Gibran's books of spiritual sayings, a very interesting article on the philosophy of logic, which I'd like to read to you. One rainy evening in the city of Beirut, Salem Effendi Davis seated himself before a bookshelf in his study and began to turn over the pages of an old volume, puffing now and then from between his thick lips a cloud of smoke he drew from a Turkish cigarette. He was reading the dialogue of self-knowledge by Socrates, recorded by his disciple Plato. Salem Effendi meditated on what he had read and felt full of praise for the philosophers and sages of the East and the West. "Know thyself," he echoed Socrates, and jumped from his feet, raised his arms, and exclaimed, "Indeed I must know myself and penetrate into my secret heart, and thus will I cast off doubt and anxiety. It is my paramount duty to disclose my ideal being to my material being, and then to disclose the secrets of my flesh and blood existence to my abstract essence." Seized with unwonted fervor, his eyes glittered with love for knowledge, self-knowledge. Then he went into the adjoining room and stood like a statue before a mirror, staring at his ghostly self and pondering upon the shape of his head and face and the trunk and limbs of his body. He remained in that position for half an hour, as if the ethereal knowledge were showering him with wonderful and exalted thoughts, in which his soul's secrets were being unveiled, filling his heart with light. Then he calmly opened his mouth and addressed himself. "I am short in stature, but so were Napoleon and Victor Hugo. I have a narrow forehead, but so had Socrates and Spinoza. I am bald-headed, but so was Shakespeare. My nose is long and crooked, but so were the noses of Voltaire and George Washington. I have sunken eyes, but so did Paul the Apostle and Nietzsche. My thick lips are similar to those of Louis XIV, and my thick neck is exactly like Hannibal's and Mark Antony's." After a moment's pause, he resumed, "My ears are long and might suit the head of an animal. The Cervantes had such ears. My features are protuberant, and my cheeks are hollow, but so were Lafayette's and Lincoln's. My chin recedes like that of William Pitt and Goldsmith. One of my shoulders is higher than the other, but Gambetta's shoulders were like that. The palms of my hands are too thick, and my fingers are too short, and in this I resemble Eddington. My body is on the skinny side, but this is a characteristic common to great thinkers. Strange that I cannot settle down to read or write without having my coffee pot beside me like Balzac. Above all, I am inclined to associate with vulgar people, in which respect I resemble Tolstoy. Sometimes I go 3 or 4 days without washing my hands and face. So did Beethoven and Walt Whitman. Strange that I take time to relax and listen to the gossip of women about their behavior when their husbands are away. This is exactly what Boccaccio did. My thirst for wine exceeds that of Marlowe, Abbey Novus, and Noah, and my gluttony surpasses that of Emar, Bashir, and Alexander the Great." After another pause, Salem Effendi touched his forehead with the tips of his dirty fingers and continued, "This is myself, this is my reality. I possess all the qualities of great men from the beginning of history to the present. A youth with such qualities is destined to great achievements. The essence of wisdom is such self-knowledge. Henceforth, I shall start the great work for which I was delegated by the great thought of this universe, who planted in the depth of my heart certain visible elements. I have accompanied great men from the time of Noah down to Socrates, through Boccaccio to Ahmet Ferus Shidyak. I do not know what great deed I shall begin with, but a man who has united in his mystic self and real person all these mystic qualities fashioned by the hands of the days and the inspirations of the nights is undoubtedly capable of achieving great things. I have known myself, yes, and the deity has known me. Long live my soul, and long live myself. May the universe endure forever that I may be able to achieve my purpose." And Salem Effendi walked back and forth in the room, his ugly face shining with joy, and with a voice that sounded like the mewing of the cat in unison with the rattling of bones, he repeated this verse by Abai Allah Al-Mahari, Although I am the last of this epoch, I shall bring forth what the founding fathers could not. And soon our friend was asleep in his untidy clothes upon his filthy bed, and his snore sounded like the grinding of millstones. There's a lot to that article, because each and every one of us has perhaps some of all of those things within ourselves, the stuff to think about. And so we are part of the beginning, we are the present, and we have within us all of the future. And this is what we are going to search for, all of the future in God. I'd like to read to you Psalm 119, beginning with verse 57. Thou art my portion, O Lord. I have said that I would keep thy words. I entreated thy favor with my whole heart. Be merciful unto me according to thy word. I thought on my ways and turned my feet unto thy testimonies. I made haste and delayed not to keep thy commandments. The bands of the wicked have robbed me, but I have not forgotten thy law. At midnight I will rise to give thanks unto thee because of thy righteous judgments. I am a companion of all them that fear thee, and of them that keep thy precepts. The earth, O Lord, is full of thy mercy. Teach me thy statutes. How many of us have sat down and have thought of our ways and have determined to change our ways and take the way that will make us realize the almighty presence within ourselves? I was reading out of some commentaries that Master made many, many years ago about Patanjali, and it was quite interesting. I was deeply tempted to do what he did, apparently, in that particular night, because he said, I'm reading from my notes so that I will not have to use so many words to describe things to you. I thought that was a very clever way of getting around the fact that he couldn't remember all the details. So I want to talk to you tonight about concentration. And I took a little bit of license here and I brought a few. What is God? God is the infinite spirit. What is soul? Soul is individualized spirit. It is like the gas burner that Master talked about so many times, that has the pilot light underneath. But yet when you put the match to that pilot light, it bursts into flame. You turn the knob, it bursts into flame, and then it comes through all of the little holes that are above the pilot light. And it seems like individual lights. And yet, if you look at it in perspective or from a distance, it is one great light. And so it is with our souls. We have two souls, it is said. And one is the soul of spirit, and the other is the soul of ego. Now, when you are concentrating on the things of the senses, on the worldly things, filling your consciousness each day, all of your time with the actions of the world, then this is the pseudo-soul in action. But the spiritual soul is of itself ever new, ever present, ever conscious bliss. But it is individual. Now, what is spirit? Spirit is all of these things, ever new, ever conscious, ever existing bliss. But it is totally universal. It is the mass. You can speak of the man as the individual soul, but you can speak of man as a part of humanity or as humanity itself, and that is the macrocosm. The microcosm is the individual. The macrocosm is the universal or the mass. Now, what we are attempting to do, each one of us who are on the spiritual path, is to once again realize our oneness with the divine, to change this pseudo-soul into the spiritual soul. In order to do that, you first have to recognize that it is a necessity. Secondly, you have to have the desire to do that within your own heart, within your own consciousness. Your heart must reach out with love and longing for God. Your mind must reach out for those things which will give you spiritual consciousness. And in order to do that, you have to learn the art of concentration. It is difficult to concentrate on the things that we are not used to concentrating on. Anytime you start in to learn a new subject, you may have difficulty in the beginning because it is strange to you. You find no difficulty in concentrating on the things that your senses direct you to reach out for. You can sit down, you can read a book, you can listen to music, you can go out and dance or go to television or go to movies or sit down and watch television, mix with your friends, take part in all the sports that are so much in evidence today. All of these things you find no difficulty in doing at all. Why? Because they cater to your five senses, to your desire nature. And you have learned, you've been taught, actually, to identify with these things since the time you were born. And it is very, very difficult to change this habit pattern of associating yourself, your mind, your consciousness with all of these things. Very difficult not to associate with them, I should say. But you stop and think. Are you these things? And yet you have become these things. This is your human ego, your human soul, so to speak. And what you have to do in order to do away with this little self, which is pure delusion, and in fact exists not, is to concentrate on that which you want to become. You want to concentrate on your real self, or the soul within you. Now, what is concentration? It is the elimination of all of the activities associated in the mind with the three bodily jars, with the things of the five senses. You have to annihilate them until there is just a state of being in your consciousness. Now, in the beginning, you shy away from such an idea, because you're so engrossed in the pleasure that all of these things give you, and not all of them give you pleasure. You identify with them because it is your normal way of thinking, of acting, of moving. But you must do away with these things. You must do away with action. And so you must learn a method of concentration. There are many methods given. There are many teachers who give methods. For instance, the Hatha Yoga teachers many, many times give methods of concentration that teach you to concentrate on something outside of the body. But as I have told you before, this is not the highest way of concentration, and you are apt to contact astral forces, to see visions, to have experiences that would not exactly be pleasant. And if your road, if the thing that you are trying to accomplish is that which must take you to God, then, and it is said that God and the kingdom of heaven are within, then it would stand to reason that the techniques which should be given to you are those which should help you to go within yourself and to find God and the kingdom of heaven within. Is that not logical? Of course it is. Of course it is. So the techniques that are given are the highest that it is possible for any human being to give. Now, we use the technique of concentration, and we are taught to concentrate upon the spiritual eye. We are given the technique for doing that, and that was the method of visualization that I started with this evening, of visualizing this spiritual eye, which is an actual reality within your own being, right in the center of your forehead. Therefore, or the light of the body is the eye. Therefore, let thine eye be single, and thy whole body shall be filled with light. So, when these two spiritual or two physical eyes are closed, then you concentrate on the spiritual eye. Now, these two eyes are furnished with light by the optic thalamus gland, and the electrical current which turns that light on enters the head at the medulla, goes straight through the brain to what we call the Christ Center and this optic thalamus gland, and then is distributed through the brain and down through all of the sub-powerhouses of the spine. But this light is concentrated here, so when you close these two eyes, you look up here, and you concentrate on this exercise which the Master gave of the blue tunnel, or of the gold tunnel first, which is the gold of cosmic energy, and then the blue tunnel, which is the blue of Christ consciousness, and finally the five-pointed silver star. That is the gate to heaven within yourself. This gland is closely associated with another gland that brings on the spiritual visions. And as you concentrate ever more deeply, more and more is revealed to you. You have visions put before you. But the greatest thing is to feel the power of God within you. I told you before about my own experience, that in the beginning I was not able to hear sounds, that I couldn't get visions, but I got feelings. And these feelings resolved themselves into mental images. And the feelings told me what the person looked like, the color of their hair, their eyes, their stature, whether they were male or female, what color suit or dress they wore. And then it went on to tell me about that individual through feeling. It was as though I had gone on an exploration of the kingdom within that individual, and God was revealing to me all of the facets. But still, I couldn't get the visions, and I didn't hear the sound. So I went to the Master, and I told him about my problem, that everybody was telling me the tremendous progress they were making, and what was the matter with me, that I wasn't getting these things. And I told him about this deep feeling that I had, and that the feelings that came within myself always were verified. They became prophecy fulfilled. And he looked at me, and he said, "I want to tell you something. To see the light of God is good. To hear the voice of God is better still. But to feel God is to be one with Him and is therefore the greatest of all." So as I told you before, I quit while I was ahead. And this is the way almost all of my life I have gotten things. I have, since that time, had certain visions. I have, since that time, heard voices even as I hear my own speaking to you. And these voices have told me truth. The visions have come to pass. They have become prophecy fulfilled. And as Rhonda said, there are three ways to test the validity of a revelation. One is, do you find it in the scriptures? A second one is, does a saint confirm it? And the third one is, does it become prophecy fulfilled? And I can assure you that in the things that God has given me, I have had all three. It is a tremendous experience to actually let go of the thoughts of the five senses and concentrate only upon God. The more you learn to do that, the more you practice it, the more you are able to control your mind, your thoughts, and to be able to control the thoughts that are constantly passing through your mind is really a feat to be accomplished. Because as I've said to you before, if you have ever taken the trouble to sit down and just watch what comes through your mind in the way of thoughts, you are sometimes amazed and sometimes shocked. You have no control over them whatsoever. But when you learn to concentrate upon God alone, when your heart reaches out in love and devotion for Him, when you want Him alone to be your beloved, when you reach out your arms, hoping that He will lift you up and take you into His arms of everlasting bliss, when it becomes the paramount thought, the paramount yearning of your life, then things really start to happen for you. And that concentration becomes then a thing of little effort. But in the beginning, you must make the effort. You know, you have three bodies. You have a physical body, you have an astral body, and you have a spiritual body. Now, it seems funny to say this when you think of yourself by a name and having only one body. But this infinite spirit is encased in the three bodily jars. And the physical body is composed of 16 elements, 10 of which are listed here: iron, carbon, sulfur, iodine, phosphorus, nitrogen, hydrogen, chlorine, calcium, potassium, etc. Now, the astral body is composed of 19 elements, 4 states of consciousness: ego, feeling, mind, and intelligence, 10 senses, and 5 life forces. The 10 senses are 5 instruments of knowledge: sight, smell, taste, touch, and sound, and 5 instruments of action: power of speech, power of locomotion in hands, feet, rectal, and genital muscles. The 5 life forces, or pranas, are the crystallizing current, the assimilating current, the circulatory current, the metabolistic current, and the eliminating current. The crystallizing current keeps the entire body and 27,000 cells alive. When it does not function properly, TB arises. The assimilating current assimilates all food into one form, ready to feed all different tissues: blood, muscles, sinews, tendons, bones, marrow, brain, etc. Its improper functioning produces indigestion and constipation. The circulating current keeps the circulatory system supplying blood to all body parts, cells, and capillaries. When this current is not properly functioning in the body, anemia, pernicious anemia, skin troubles, etc., occur in the human body. The metabolistic current builds out of the same substance different organs. When this current becomes feeble in the body due to wrong living, then the bodily organs begin to dry up. That is, cataracts, shrinking of the intestines, adhesions, etc. Also drying up of the liver, lung collapses, etc. The eliminating current helps the peristaltic action, or muscles. It helps to throw out poisons. This current mostly acts through the white corpuscles, or police cells. The improper functioning of this current creates intestinal and stomach gases, constipation, lack of hunger, cancer, tumors, pimples, boils, and carbuncles. Lastly, the spiritual body is composed of 35 elements, or 35 thoughts required to make the physical and astral bodies. In other words, before God created iron in the physical body, he had to think of it. The spiritual or idea body is the first encasement God gave your soul, and he put his spirit in these ideas, and he quickened them, and they became visible as the astral body. The tissue of the astral body is light, and the tissue of the physical body is tissue. The spiritual body is made of thought consciousness. Now, when you want to modify the condition of the mind, you have to deal with 5 things: evidence, misconception, fancy, sleep, and memory. Now, in evidence, we have perception, inference, and testimony. You must, if you think that something is so, you want the evidence of it, you must perceive it. Now, many times you think that you are perceiving something that is real, and yet it is merely an inference on your part. For instance, you may see something that looks like a fire in the distance, and you see smoke coming up from it. And yet, when you have driven to where that place is, you see that it is merely a dusty road, and what you saw was the rising of dust in the road. And therefore, your senses didn't exactly give you the facts. But actually, evidence is proven by testimony as a rule. Now, there can be false testimony given. But if somebody has really seen something, experienced it, actually lived it, that is evidence. It is the testimony of one who knows. Now, we have another thing, which is misconception. Now, you can conceive something to be a certain way, but it can be misconception because your senses are not functioning right. Why? Because your mind is filled with ideas that would tend to make you misconceive exactly what you are seeing, what you are hearing, what you are touching and smelling and seeing. Now, your fancy is something that has no substance in fact. It is when your imagination takes wing and you imagine, you fancy something that you would like, something that you want to come to pass, something that you want to possess, something you want to do, and it is purely fanciful on your part. And yet that fancy, if it be backed up with the power of the mind and the extreme desire over a period of time for that thing to come to pass, and if it is backed up with the necessary action, the learning process, the getting of the tools, the doing what is necessary to bring it into actual being, it will come to pass because your mind, as far as your human self, is all is all powerful. But also, this mind can be used, if you use this power of concentration, to become all-powerful in taking you to God. Another thing we have to deal with is memory. Memory is the bringing back of those thoughts, words, and actions that have been a part of our past life. And we occupy ourselves so much with things of that nature. So much. And yet we should not. We must learn to live in the now. To really learn to be. And in order to be, we must become. And in order to become, we must learn to concentrate and to control our thoughts, to control our mind, until that mind is our obedient servant and we force it to think about only that which we wish to think about, that which we wish to attain. Now, as you practice this power of controlling your mind, either through this method of concentrating on the spiritual eye and the exercise which, if you follow it, takes you a million miles upward, a million miles below, a million miles in front, a million miles behind, and all around you, it is to get rid of your body consciousness. The fact, the idea, rather than the fact, that I am the body. It is to make me know that I am infinite spirit. It is to give me the power, through my imagination in the beginning, to roam the universe at will. But in that imagination that I use, I can also see myself entering the kingdom of heaven that is within myself, as well as I can visualize myself flying up to the outer heavens, and as once happened to me, walking around, floating through the planets, and seeing the sun, the moon, and the stars, and seeing the earth merely as a ball revolving around and around. What tremendous power this power of thought has. This mind has, and what it can do. And yet just think how we waste this power in just following the will, the wisps of our imagination every single day, of our desires, when we could be putting all of this energy, all of this attention upon attaining the realization of our oneness with God. The second method for concentration that we are given is the Hong Shao technique, where we learn to focus fully upon the fact that we are breathing, not actually governing nor controlling the breath, but just watching yourself breathe. And as you concentrate on that fully, the day comes when you find that you don't need to breathe at all, where you are fully conscious, where your body is in a state of suspended animation, and yet you are not breathing. You are not wearing out your body parts. Then there is another method of concentration which is called the Om technique. And that is listening, usually in the right ear, if you can hear in that ear, for the sound of Om. Now we chant this sound, this word Om, every single time we come together to worship God. And that is the word. It is the sound which first emanated from the stillness of God. It is that powerful vibratory force which brought this world into being. And as you listen to the sound of Om, at first you may hear many sounds because your human ear is attuned to hear many sounds. But it is only attuned to hear so many rates of vibration. And so while there's airplanes flying and buses running and goodness knows what's happening just a block from here, we don't hear it because our ears are not so attuned to that distance. But when you go within and you listen, what you hear is not with the outer ear. You hear this Om sound with your inner ear. And as you continue to concentrate on it, it grows louder and louder and louder and louder. And it's a high-pitched sound. A high-pitched sound. Then there is what we call mantra yoga. And that is the saying of mantras or singing of mantras to God. And you must do this with full concentration. Now we sing Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram, which means victory to God, through God's word, which is Om. Then there is the chant, God, Christ, Guru. There have been many, many chants, many words. For instance, in the Tibetan religion, they have Om Mani Padme Hum. And these represent the five elements of the body. And they feel that these five elements of the body must be controlled first before they can go on to their higher knowledge, their higher realization. But I tell you that the Christ way of fixing the mind fully upon God through Himself, through Christ, is the greatest way there is. Because He said that God and the kingdom of heaven are to be found within. And that if you seek God first, then all of the other things shall be added unto you. Now, any time you take up any method which is going to give you powers, any time you take up any method which is going to give you clairvoyance, occultism, psychic ability, everything but the highest spiritual thing is dangerous. Now, you can become an adept, a master at any one of these things. You can become a spiritualistic medium. But you put your life in the hands of forces that you know not of. And you do not have the full protection of God. You must concentrate upon God alone. And if you will do that, He will lift you up. He will tell you things of unspeakable beauty. He will give you tremendous realizations. He will guide you, He will direct you, and He will protect you from all harm. And if you will put Him first, then the day will come when, having concentrated on Him to the exclusion of all else, you go beyond all of the things that you were concentrating upon before. And you come face to face with the stillness of your own soul. It is as though the soul is a spectator without a spectacle, shall we say. And this is the way it is. It is the same as the fuel and the fire. The fire cannot burn without the fuel. And yet when the fuel is set on fire, it becomes the fire itself. And so it is that finally, when you have given yourself to God in full surrender, totally without reservation, when it is no longer your desire to be separate from Him, to have any conscious thought but Him in your mind, to do no will but His alone, then, in a sense, the soul is burned in the fire of its own desire for God. It gives up its individuality for the moment, and it becomes one with that eternal flame, that eternal spirit, that eternal fire of God, with that eternal consciousness. And is not interested in things because it is in the state of being. I am that I am. All these things you will realize if you will learn the art of concentration. And when you learn this art of concentration, it applies not only to what I have just described, but it applies to every facet of your human material world. Because if you practice these methods of concentration, you will learn to have a deeper concentration on any project that you undertake, any subject that you undertake to learn. You will have a concentration that will extend beyond your conscious control. Have you, any of you, I'm sure, maybe all of you, have had this experience at one time or another? Have you wrestled with something that you were trying to unravel? With a problem, with a bank balance, with this, with that, or the other thing. And you couldn't get it to come out the way you wanted to. And you became so tired, so exhausted that you couldn't concentrate anymore. And all of a sudden you think to yourself, oh, I'm sorry, I'm at an impasse. I've got to give up. I need it for tomorrow morning, but I guess I'll have to take the consequences. So you go to bed, and you go to sleep. Now the wise man, before he goes to bed, will put the problem in the hands of God. And he will know that God is going to take care of that answer for him in the morning. When he wakes up, that everything that he was striving for, all the knots in the problem are going to be unraveled, and there the answer is going to be, in all truth. I've done this many, many times. And there it was in the morning. Just as plain, and it was there last night. But my mind was so tired, I couldn't concentrate on it. I couldn't see where I had made an error. And all of a sudden, there it is. You know, when you surrender yourself in full concentration, with full love and devotion to God, He moves through you, He thinks through you, He speaks through you, He does everything through you and for you. And you are the constant recipient of His grace. The only responsibility you have is to listen to His voice of direction and to let yourself do what He tells you to do. Now, some of the things that He requires of you sometimes you wonder about. But yet, as you look back, having done exactly what the Lord said, you will find that He knew exactly what He was about. That He said the right thing, He thought the right thing, He did the right thing. No matter how it seemed at the moment, no matter what the appearance, that it was right for the individual who stood before you, or the crowd who stood before you, or it was right for His plan and His purpose. And it helped to move a world. When you stop to think that we are not the body, that we are in truth, pure spirit, clothed with the body, and that we have all of these encumbrances, that we must get rid of, that we have three bodily jars, and we must open the cork and let the spirit out of each one of these jars, it is an amazing thought. Master many times used the example of taking some ocean water and putting it first in a smaller jar and corking it up, and then putting that jar in a larger one that would hold it and corking that up, and then putting it's still in the third jar, pouring the water in and corking that up. So you have the same ocean, which could be likened into spirit, in these three jars with the corks on. But the ocean, the part of the ocean that is in the bottles, cannot be released and mingle with the ocean and feel itself a part of that ocean until you remove the three corks. And so that is what yoga is all about. That is what concentration is all about. It teaches you to concentrate until you get rid of I am the body idea. It teaches you love and devotion for God. It teaches you a reaching out until you are willing to surrender yourself and everything you have at the feet of the Lord. And when that happens, then God takes over. All of the outer influences gradually disappear. And then you go through the experience that the Christ went through, when He crucified the Son of Man, or the human ego, on His own cross, which was His body. And He descended into the subconscious, or the hell of His own being. And you will remember that it speaks very specifically and definitely of being in hell or Hades for 3 days. In the morning of the third day, He arose from the dead. In other words, He died to the sense of separation. And He rose from the dead, or from that which was ignorant within Himself. But this is a process which requires going through certain tests, certain spiritual experiences, all of which have a physical and a mental reaction on what you call your body. And it is a very interesting, if a very difficult, experience. But first you must pull the cork out of the gross or the physical body, because you see, that is the thing which was brought into manifestation last, and it houses the other two, you may say. And so the first thing that you do is to release the consciousness from the physical or the gross body. Next, you release it from the astral or the electrical body. Now, with the gross body, it is the ego of the five senses, and this is a very painful, a very difficult one. And the consciousness, when it is released from this particular body, undergoes many, many things. You're given many, many revelations. But when it is finally released, then the whole action takes place on the right side of your body. Your heart starts to beat there instead of on the left, which is the true meaning of what it says in Ecclesiastes. A fool's heart is on his left, a wise man's on his right, because the soul, through releasing his consciousness from that physical body, has gained that much wisdom. He's gotten that much closer to the total release of his spirit from this prison, this bodily prison. And then the next release, of course, must come from the astral or the electrical body. And the body goes through many electrical experiences. This is when the kundalini comes into being and really takes hold. I have even had burns on my body and could not account for them. When I was wearing a woolen robe, and my husband would help me out of that robe at night when I had been was through doing my work for the day for God, when I was going through this experience, the electricity from that woolen robe actually left burn marks on my body. And that burn came so deeply that I even had a burn on my leg, and one of the deputies here, I think, witnessed that. When I touched an ivory meditation lamp, the lamp shattered into 1,000 pieces, and the cord of the lamp from being white turned into pink and blue, and the base of it was 1/3 larger than it had been before. I still have the base as proof of the experience that I went through. Now, this is very difficult to believe, perhaps, and to accept in our physical world with our human consciousness, but these things do happen, because there are so many tremendous things in the world that we haven't any faintest concept of, because we have closed our minds to them, or our minds have not been open to the greater knowledge that is within ourselves, to the greater experience. And lastly comes the release from the thought process, the mind, the idea mind, or the causal body, as it is called. And you're dealing with elemental forces that have no form, but that have power. And this, too, can be a very interesting experience. But when Christ rose from the dead, the sepulcher, which is the heart in which he is entombed within yourself, opens. The Gordian knot is released, which ties this life force to the body, and the spirit is released from the body at that time. It is released from Hades, or the place of ignorance, the place of the dead. And then it is filled with the power of the Holy Ghost, or the divine ego. And then comes the ascension to God. And just like it, as it took 3 days or 3 separate periods of time to do that, to descend into the hell of your own being, so also it takes 3 separate days or 3 separate periods of time and experience to ascend into the heaven of your own being and to become one with the Father, who is the indwelling presence there. You will note that in the scriptures in Genesis, that it speaks about creation taking 6 days. And on the 7th day, God rested. That is the Sunday. And so it is that the 6 lower spinal centers have the positive and negative forces within them. And when the kundalini, or the serpent force, has risen up the spine and has gone through this 6th, or Christ center, it goes up through the brain and is coiled around the head. And you will see the statues, the likenesses of the Mother Kali and the god Shiva, with the snake, the serpent on top of the head, showing that there is no longer duality in that being, but only the oneness of God. But it is then, when you have made the supreme effort, when you have destroyed the idea of separation from God, when you have done away with this ego of the 5 senses, it is then that you the Son of God, the Light of God, floods your whole being. And it is indeed a day of rest, because in that day you rest in the house of the Lord. You have become one with your Father. You have realized who and what you are. And believe me, that is the most tremendous experience that man can ever have. It is what we were born for, what we came to this earth for, what we have gone through incarnations to realize, that we came here but for this purpose alone, to realize that we and our Father are one. I do a lot of talking all the time. I try to choose different subjects to inspire you to seek God within yourself. I try to make you laugh. I teach you how to play in God. I teach you how to be serious. And sometimes I teach you through the love of the crucible. But in everything that I teach you, I would like you to remember that the reason behind all of it is that you may one day take up all of these methods, these techniques, these instruments which have been given to you, and put them into practice every day of your life faithfully until that day comes when you can see your own Savior crucified on your own cross, and also that you have the blessed, the glorious prison, the glorious privilege of seeing your own arisen Christ. You know what that means? You know, saints down through the ages have had visions of the Christ. And I wonder if any one of them, and I wonder this because of what I have read, have ever realized that each one of them have a different vision than every other person. Just as each artist who has ever painted his idea of the Christ has made a different picture, has painted a different picture than every other one. But that each one is different because each one sees his own on his own cross. He sees him crucified and he sees him glorified. And then if he is fortunate, he is taken up by the arms of God into the heaven of his own being, and he is one with him forevermore. So the Hindus say, I am he, I am he. Blessed Spirit, I am he. And they acknowledge with everything that is within them. And this is truth. This is not imagination. This is possible. It is possible to you. It has been possible to me. And it is possible to all those who will concentrate and make the effort and surrender themselves completely to God alone.